Hello and welcome to this week's Mall Over podcast. Slightly thinner this week because Russ isn't here, but still with an equally West Country accent. I'm Dougie. You probably know that. I'm a little bit rusty at the presenting stuff. I've got the housewife's favourite has rocked up for a guest appearance.
How you doing? Yeah, good. I thought you were about to nip into the fast show there with I'm a little bit ooh, I'm a little bit ah.
I can do that if you want.
No, it's all
arse.
Good.
Topical.
And we've got the gentleman of the Mall Over podcast, Ben Eustace, at the bottom of the screen. He's where you come from if you want. He's where you go if you want a balanced and honest opinion that isn't
entertaining.
Entertaining, yeah. There you go. I've only seen two games of rugby this weekend. I saw Glasgow v Exeter, which was interesting. We can talk about that. I don't know if either of you saw that.
Nope.
No. Ben?
Well, no, not really. The only rugby I've seen this weekend was a very close-up view of Nuki versus Veal.
Why don't we start with that, the biggest game of the weekend? I know people quite like when we talk about local rugby. And I for one, am always interested in Nuki v Veal matches purely because, let's get straight to the chase. Was there any scrapping?
Mate, I'm going to have to disappoint you. Veal was spot on this time. Turned up. We had a few call-ups to the first team, so we were short a player or two, and they even lent us a couple of players, and the guys they lent us put in 110% to launch a cliche at you this early.
What happens if you turn up with 14 or whatever, or a bare 15, you get the shitters, don't you?
Yeah.
The guy who plays flanker who's 5'8" and 9 stone wet through.
Exactly. Well, what they did this time, which ensured a bit of competitiveness, was gave us two blokes whose sons were playing for Veal. So they got proper stuck in. It was a really good game, and it was played in a really good spirit. So it's probably a real disappointment to everyone, but everyone got a game. Everyone enjoyed it, and beers were had afterwards. So that's what rugby's about, really.
No mention of the result, though, right?
We lost, I think it was
114-6.
I think it was 22-15.
Oh, you got to love that when you're 58-0 down and you go for the penalty. I think the last time I played in a game where we got lent players, the second team came, guy came over, turned around to him and was like, oh, so what position do you play? And he said, I don't really know. That's never a good start, is it?
To be fair, it's usually us doing the lending. It's quite unusual for us to be short. And it's never easy to go and play for the opposition. So, great credit to anyone that will do it. But you say about people not knowing what position they play. I always remember we had a lad playing for us many years ago who had never played rugby before, but he turned up and he was so fast that we let him to the opposition and he scored two tries. So the following week we kept him and he scored two tries, and then the third week we played a sort of even game. The two that we played in before were quite one-sided, and he actually had to do some defending, which took the form of a sort of Cantona-esque scissor kick as a guy went past him, and someone asked him, I thought you'd read up on the rules, and he said, oh no, I haven't got to the page in the book about tackling yet.
that's so, rings so true.
It's when you have to come to one of your teammates' defense with, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Clueless. I remember playing in a charity game once, and a guy that used to be an RAF boxing champion, a bit of a footballer, but had never played rugby before, got roped into play. He's quite a big lad, 6'2", and we said, Jace, play in the centres, mate, because, you know, he goes, I don't know what I'm doing, Dougie. Like, don't worry. If you get the ball, just run fast and straight. And if anyone runs at you, put them on the floor. The first phase of the game, I spin a pass to 10 to 12. Jason just runs straight through their defence and dots down under the posts, trots back and goes, I reckon I might like this game. And he ended up scoring two tries, and he ended up hurting quite a few people as well. You know, one of those guys is just too good at it.
Yeah, good at everything.
Yeah. I'm disappointed there was no ag.
Yeah.
We need to be all think they are. And I've been thinking about it as well. Like, Nuki, you guys must have targets on your back because you're like the Cornish biggest town in Cornwall, right?
Well, rugby-wise, there's... You've got Redruth and Camborne and...
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Penzance.
Yeah, and I suppose Truro would be better than us at the moment, wouldn't they?
Well, nearly everyone's better than us at the moment.
In terms of player base, yeah. you've got quite a bit.
But yeah, it's one of... Certainly, I suppose the junior section shows it as much as anything else. I'm currently coaching the under-7s. The only rugby I've watched is Newquay Hornets under-7s against Llankelly Foy under-7s. But our under-7s, we've got 25 kids registered. Most other clubs have got 3 or 4. It's rare that we come up against another team with double figures. And like,
how
just
is it that because obviously the Cornish rugby, you've got Pirates, obviously, but then you've got Camborne, Redruth, Penzance are quite a good, quite a decent level, aren't they?
Well, Penzance are Cornish Pirates,
I guess. Yeah, okay. But you've got 3 or 4 clubs that are in the top 2 or 3 divisions, haven't you?
Yeah, you've got Redruth, Camborne, Launceston, and then St Austell, I guess, are on getting up that way, and Wadebridge as well. I think Newquay probably lose more than a lot of clubs to people moving away and going to university.
Mm.
And seasonal, certainly when I was playing first team, it would be that away games until end of October, you're on a fairly scratched squad because there's a lot of seasonal workers, bar work, etc., who they've got to be at work at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, so they can't go away. I remember one game early on in the season, we went up to, I think it was Tiverton, and it was myself, friend of the pod, Mr. Ferris, I think Ross Robbins were the only 3 players over the age of 18 in the team. We made sure the bus journey back was fun, but yeah, it was turning up with a Colts team with a couple of old farts in the
middle.
I think we all ended up playing front row because we were the only ones that were old enough to.
So do you have players that go from your first into like the Camborne team or the Redruth team?
You get the odd one. When Pirates sort of first became a bit more of a force, you know, when they first started to move up the leagues, there was quite a few ex-Newquay players there at the time. And we've got a couple down at Redruth at the moment. But yeah, it's one of those things. I think a lot of clubs, probably in every county, they have a bit of a cycle going on. You know, they go up a few leagues, and then they're up against teams that are paying players, and then they drop back down through the leagues. And Newquay were in that sort of cycle for quite a few years. They'd go up to 2 or 3 leagues, drop down 2 or 3 leagues, and go back up again. And at the moment, we've sort of plateaued at this sort of top of Cornwall One level, so we're not travelling too far, and we've got a strong side, but it's a young side and it's quite a small side. You know, you get quite a lot of meaty packs down here, especially in the lower leagues, whereas Newquay is a sort of more sort of
always been lightweight in the past.
Yeah, a sort of Scotland-esque team almost, you know.
I suppose the thing from your point, Doug, What tends to happen, and it's probably as evident now as it ever has been, is the good kids tend to go to a Plymouth or an Exeter at a kind of Colts or moving on from Colts kind of stage. I mean, there's 3 Newquay players played. It was Exeter Chiefs against Bath under 18s, and there were 3 Newquay players in the Exeter team and 1 in the Bath team.
Right.
which for a club side playing in Cornwall One, to have four representing in the starting teams for those squads is pretty good, I reckon.
And so the other clubs, are they sort of backed by money men, are they? Are they? Is that why you've got those teams at that level?
Not to an incredible amount. I mean, Redruth have been the top club in the county probably for 70, 80 years at least. It's a quite populated area. Redruth and Camborne are only a few miles apart, and they've always been two of the biggest clubs. And I think it's just it's like some of these towns in South Wales where rugby's just the thing in the town. Newquay does have a lot of distractions, whereas perhaps Redruth and Camborne don't so much. Wadebridge, it's a very strong farming area, so you've got a lot of big boys around there. They don't tend to travel as well, which sort of restricts them. So, you know, it's the same in every county. You've got some teams that are perpetually strong and some that yo-yo a bit.
And are the Pirates quite active with all the junior clubs in the area? Or are they, you know, not that? Would think they would be at every game, have a representation trying to find players basically sell on.
I think there's a really strong county setup in the juniors. So they almost use the county selectors as their pre-selectors.
Right.
And they'd be hitting all the county junior games on the way up. And my understanding of the way it works is when they get to under 14s, under 15s, something like that, is each club puts forwards who they think are their best players for county selection. And getting into that county squad, I think, is your route to getting spotted.
Because they're always perpetually in that game before the Barbarians game, aren't they? The county
yeah.
and all that. Yeah, I love a bit of local rugby chat. My old club, Bishop Stortford, lost at the weekend. National One. Obviously, I was never anywhere near that. But they're competing with teams that, you know, like Richmond, that have got a huge budget, and they're basically a team that's benefited from having a couple of decent schools locally that have, you know, kept a few players and gone up the leagues. They had Dan Leo playing for them for a while, but there you go. Should we move on from local rugby? As much like I could honestly talk about it for a whole pod, and I don't know, maybe we should one day. Maybe we should actually do that. We'll talk about the Exeter game that I was at. I mean, don't need to say too much. Stuart Hogg had a 80th minute penalty to win the match from 60 metres, and it hit the crossbar.
For any money, for the entirety of the time that ball was in the air, you say it's going over.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the arc of the trajectory, it got about 10 yards away, and it just almost dropped down off a cliff.
The weather up there was insane. I mean, 5 minutes after the game finished, it was torrential rain, and it was windy all day. So obviously some funny stuff going on. What I most want to pick out from that though was the performance of the French referee, which was single-handedly the worst ever display of refereeing I've ever seen. And we make a point of not bashing refs on here, but that performance was so bad, I can't let it slide.
Go, Adam, Doug.
You know, when you're missing knock-ons right in front of you, you're seeing video replays that aren't being looked at. He's looking at a video replay and deciding that what's actually on the screen isn't what's happened. It was bizarre. And there was a couple of really weird things in the Racing game, the Teddy Thomas try, that he dotted down in the corner. They didn't show two angles from the end at which he scored the try, both of which, with my knowledge of how those cameras work, would have shown whether the light ball was over the line, but the director or the TMO never showed either angle. That is a little bit like, what is going on there? Sounds like it seemed like it was a bit of, yeah, we're not going to show that angle because the trial will be disallowed, but the referees need to have a little bit more knowledge about what cameras show what. You would think by now Stuart Barnes would be able to go, no, I want to see that corner camera over there because that's where the angle will show whether it's over the line or not. Doesn't seem like they're being educated enough on how to use the cameras that they've got at their disposal.
Was that the try? This is like the entirety of my Twitter knowledge of rugby. Was that the try that had the absolutely ridiculous out of the back of the hand 30-yard pass from
that was
scrum half? I mean that pass, I mean I thought it was a knock on before it, and I still think it was a knock on in the lead up to it. And I know the ball bounced backwards, but I reckon it was a knock on.
Reckon it was a knock on as well?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I reckon the scrum half thought it was a knock on, and he's just gone bang, I'm gonna chuck it.
Yeah.
The try Doug was talking about, would that be anything to do with a French sort of TV director providing the replays?
I mean, I wouldn't like to say yes, but yes.
I mean, I would say for it that that on commentary, he pretty much straight away sort of said, oh, I think that's a try. I think he's got it. So, you know, fair play to him. It was a brilliant effort either way. So, you know, perhaps... Yeah, let's not throw in many accusations at the French, but let's keep doing it.
So, with the Exeter game then, Doug, mm-hmm. Do you reckon the refereeing played a significant role in the end result? Do you reckon he was favouring one side over the other?
I don't think there was a favouritism thing. I just think it was a very bizarre performance. There was a yellow card for a Glasgow player for entering a ruck and hitting someone with a shoulder that should have been a red. But in 5 seconds prior to that, Alec Hepburn went in and swung his fist and connected with Adam Hastings and split his nose open. And that wasn't even looked at. And the whole Glasgow crowd was like, you know, going a bit crazy about it because you could see it on every replay, but the referee just completely ignored it. There was numerous missed knock-ons, several offsides, forward passes, just a really bizarre display. Really bizarre.
Because I suppose the thing you always say is, as a club player, is actually you don't mind how shit the ref is as long as he's equally shit on both sides. I suppose the point is these guys are being paid reasonable money. They ought to do a decent job for it.
Yeah, yeah. And just, I saw something on Twitter today about, you know, the way the game is refereed now, where you get referees saying hands off, roll away, you know, and the point being that by the time they've said that, the offence has already happened because they wouldn't have to say it if that somebody wasn't infringing. Yeah. So why say it in the first place? Just blow the whistle. And he would do stuff. The ref was doing stuff like use it, and then there'd be, you know, Nick White taking 10 seconds to roll the ball back and then saying 2 seconds, you know.
So my understanding of the rules is when they say use it, you've got 5 seconds.
Mm. Yeah.
As soon as they say use it, that five. But I've never seen anybody penalised ever for not using it.
No.
I don't mind it when they go, sometimes they go, hands away now, if there's been like a fair competition for the ball initially and then the ruck's formed. I don't mind that. But you're right. If they're going, you're lying on the floor, get out of the way, they've already committed the offence.
Because sometimes it's where someone's been on their feet, got hold of the ball, and then they've overbalanced and got off their feet, and then he says, well, let go of it. So, you know, that's almost fair enough. But the 5 second rule just isn't applied at all.
No, it's like offside. Some rules are applied, some aren't, and it's massively annoying. Massively annoying. Okay, I think we've done enough summing up rugby, haven't we? Should we chat about a few other things? We made a bullet pointed list today for things we wanted to chat about. Should we do the England squad? We're not going to go through the whole squad, right? I think we.
No.
I don't think there'll be too many changes from the World Cup squad, really. But I think we should probably talk about who you might feel could be added to that squad that wasn't there.
So for me, the big question is still over scrum half.
Ben Curry, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. But that rumour's come out, and Eddie likes to throw around these switch positions. He did it with Noel at flanker. That rumour came out purely just to wind up the press. I'm convinced of it. But Youngs was awful in the final. Clearly isn't the answer for 4 years' time. The question mark is whether Eddie leaves him in as a steadying influence. Hines, if he's fit, is in there. But the big question is who else fills that hole? And there's a raft of people who could be putting their hands up. It's which one does he prefer over the rest? And I'm going to go to you on that, Doug, as the scrum half, and see who you would pick.
Well, let's play the game. Ben had his hand up. What do you want to say?
Yeah, all I did think of the Curry thing, could that just be a ploy for yellow cards? If England have had a yellow card, then it
so
might
you take off well. You take off nine, and how do you defend the scrum though?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just because sometimes you've got if you've had a prop yellow carded, you have to then make a replacement. So do you then take your scrum half off because you're not probably expecting to be going forward too much during that time? I don't know whether it's just, you know, he's only planning on using it either under that circumstances or towards just the last 5 minutes of a game. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me, unless the only other thing is it could be like an all-out bid for turnovers. But
play Curry and Underhill on the flank, Curry at nine, Wilson at 10.
I mean, even if it
Simmons
was a
at 12,
the only thing I'm thinking, yeah. The only thing I'm thinking is if he is genuinely looking at it, he's certainly not going to be intending to do it from the start. I mean, that he likes to tinker, but he's not completely nuts. So I wonder if there's a bit more logic to it along those lines. But I think Phil's right. Nine is England's weakest area by probably a country mile.
Do you think it's a throwback to the Bergamasco?
Yeah, well, he saw how well that worked.
Yeah. two players that I think should get a look are Henry Taylor. It's Henry Taylor, isn't it? Yeah. The Saints.
Northampton
Saints
one.
Guy. Yep. And Harry Randall. I'd give Harry Randall a look.
Yeah, I like Randall.
Especially as a replacement. Maybe not from the start, but if you need a spark or something like that, he could be a good 21 as opposed to a nine.
Yeah. I mean,
they're the only players. I think he doesn't fancy Robson.
No.
Simpson has sort of disappeared a bit now that Hines is back.
Spencer was the flavour of the month and seems to be out of favour.
Yeah.
To me, I would have Hines and Spencer and then have a third choice in there for the Italy game or on the bench, or just give somebody a bit of exposure, a bit of experience. But
I keep forgetting about Hines because he's clearly not English.
True.
There you go. I think the other position we've got to look at is in the front row. Got a couple of problem positions there. I don't know whether or not you continue with Cole and Marler or you look to go elsewhere with them too. You know my opinion on that.
So I think you've been Cole and Marler. Need to be aware of the fact that as good a player as Mako is, his body's a wreck. You've got some good options there in Sinclair and Genge. It's about building enough depth. I think prop is really that position where you need probably four options, loose head and tight head, because you know there's a chance that at least one of them's going to get injured and two of them are not going to last a whole tournament. You're going to want to rotate some of them around.
It's time for like...
Sorry.
What was that?
Dog's got a bone. I'm going to go and kick it out.
Jesus Christ.
Phil's menagerie is getting out of control.
Unbelievable. probably time for Genge. I mean, just to go units, you go Genge, Sinclair, Urbano.
Yeah, I think I think Urbano will get a look. I think, is it Stuart at Bath? I think he'll get a look. You've got Harry Williams. Yeah. I don't think he's ever let England down. I thought
Hepburn
looked a bit undergunned when he came on on the international pitch, but Williams has been good.
I think Ben Moon made more of an impression when he came on.
That he didn't go to Japan, really. I thought he was really good.
And I suppose the thing about Moon is, as much as he's not the youngest, he probably hasn't played as much high-intensity rugby as some of the other props as they're getting older. He hasn't got the injury history behind him that he can probably last a bit longer than, say, a Mako would.
Mm.
I think Mako's such a good player that, you know, he's always going to be your first choice. But, you know, Hooker, it's probably a coin toss at the moment between Cowan Dickey and George, because Cowan Dickey's playing so well. And then, you know, who else is putting their hand up? Well, you've mentioned Simmons. And I think Nick Tompkins.
Do you think Joe Simmons is going to get a shout?
Not yet, I don't think. I think he likes Ford Farrell too much, and I think if they're both fit, he's kind of nailed his colours to the mast on that. I think he should. I think because he provides something a bit different and is probably the next in line.
Is that reliable goal kicking?
Yeah.
I mean, while we're on the subject of England, obviously they've announced their coaches for the new run. Some weird ones. Steve Borthwick has been made skills coach. If by skills that means smashing people in the face, line outs and smashing people in the face at rucks, then we're going to be all right, aren't we?
Sounds good to me. Back to basics. Let's go for it.
Yeah, he's not renowned for his high-skilled play, is he? Other than line outs.
I'm not sure that Steve Borthwick, as your skills coach, is going to have the Kiwis trembling in their boots.
But then does skills coach mean the same thing to everybody? Mm. I mean, ultimately, you've got Eddie Jones and you've got a coaching team around them, and the coaching team enact whatever he decides. Just because he's titled skills coach doesn't mean he's the one making sure they can pass the ball.
You've brought in
Simon Amor as the attack coach and John what's-his-face stays as defence coach.
And then you've brought the most South African-looking man in the world in to be your, is it the forwards coach?
Yeah.
Nelson, I mean, no. Have you seen this guy? He's about 6 foot two and about 20 stone with a massive beard.
Yeah,
that's what you want to have a forwards coach, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'm all in favour of this.
You want him to not be a nice man.
Yeah,
just a really unfriendly man.
It could well be that they're going to just go because the World Cup showed the way to win tournament rugby is beat the hell out of people up front, and that looks like maybe that's what he's looking to do.
Here's a niche comment for you, Ben. Do you know Carl Fyce Thompson?
No, I don't think I do.
No, okay. He's a Newquay guy. His kid plays for the under-14s. He looks just like Matt Proudfoot.
Wow.
Ringer for him.
Does he fancy a game for the second team?
I think he would if his body wasn't broken.
I mean,
your dog's having a right old laugh, isn't it, Phil?
That wasn't the dog.
Oh, really?
That wasn't
God.
Seventh coach for the backs and a horrible, gnarly man for the forwards. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's probably going to take a little bit of time to bed in, and I think. I can't see him making four wholesale changes on the team that won or didn't win the World Cup.
No.
But I think a few key positions.
Well, I don't think Slade's going to make the tournament, is he? So there's no. One change. Cruz isn't getting much of a game at the moment. So
surely the natural answer to Slade is Joseph at the moment.
Yeah, I think Joseph's playing so well at the moment that that's your answer there. And then you decide whether you want to go Ford and Farrell or if you want to stick with Tuilagi at 12. Fullback, I don't think he'll change that. I'm not 100% convinced by Daly, and he's not playing fullback very often for Saracens, but he seems to have gone with that. May's still May, and he scores tries at a rate for England, so you're not going to change that. And the back row, you've got a lot of talent there. Simmons, Ben Earl might come in.
What was that?
I think that was a picture of his lookalike.
Oh, right, okay.
It was a large man, anyway.
It was.
Maybe Phil's got a lot of pictures of large men on his phone. We can say that because he's muted himself.
Yeah, he has. Brilliant.
I think the point, well done. I think the point is that we're not going to see whole-scale changes. What we're going to see is a few people brought in. My suspicions are they'll be the usual suspects. There'll be the people that have been in.
Oh, he's done it again.
Yeah.
Come on. Right, let's move on.
Interesting anyway.
Yeah, let's move on from England. What is going on at your house, Phil?
Well, that's why I muted it. Sorry. It's what happens when you've got a family.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so we'll move on from that. A couple of... we need a jingle for this. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. Old Welsh rugby player news. Da-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Jamie Roberts is going to South Africa and James Hook has retired. James Hook. Now, I've read a lot of people on Twitter saying that James Hook, one of the most naturally talented, yada, yada, yada. Every time I saw him, he was shit.
I thought he retired about 10 years ago, to be fair.
Maybe he had to retire his nose first. obviously played a lot of times for Wales and the Lions, but I don't really care about that. Jamie Roberts going to South Africa pretty much sums up South African rugby, doesn't it?
Yeah, somebody who was one-dimensional at their best.
Yeah, all their good players
half a dimension.
Yeah, all their good players have left, and so they're getting washed up Welshmen to come and play in their Super Rugby teams.
I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, but Jamie Roberts, about 8 to 10 years ago in full flight, was one of the best things to watch in rugby. Just running a straight line, you know, off probably line out ball and just skittling South Africans. But, you know, that was, what was that Lion Tour nearly 12 years ago? And they've probably still got memories of that, you know, Roberts and O'Driscoll rather than Roberts and Joseph of the last season and a half.
Yeah. just a fairly old man.
Yeah.
Running quite slowly and making 30 centimetres.
And hurling a pass to the touch judge.
Yeah. Obviously, touch isn't
like it. A bit like that second team game where I decided I was a centre. Lasted 8 minutes before my knee fell apart.
And to be fair, no one else had decided that either.
No, I know. I'm sticking with it.
I just want to give you a quote from Tubbs, who's sadly not here. He's at a competitive eating competition in Bristol, eating pies. The reason Jamie Roberts has gone to South Africa is because all their CUNTing players are at sale. So that's Russ's one contribution to this week's pod.
He's been very foul-mouthed on our WhatsApp group today, hasn't he?
I genuinely worry for him. He had quite a harebrained scheme the other day, didn't he, for something he wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
That we gave him no encouragement for. And I think it may have sort of knocked his confidence a little bit.
Well, I think he's noticed the string of reality TV based on singing and thought, I can get a bit of that.
Yeah, I can get a bit of that cow cash.
Yeah.
Is he going into Love Island? Is that what it is?
Fuck.
That would be amazing. Could you imagine Russ and his budgie smugglers on Love Island?
Oh, God. How many... Say there's a dozen people in there. How many do you reckon he would have pissed off by the first evening? 14? I
mean, including all the producers and crew.
Yeah. Sorry, the whole series has been cancelled. We're going to have to start again.
Sit down here, love, and I'll tell you how much I've got my handicap down this summer.
Yeah, he is a bandit. Hang on one sec. Talk amongst yourselves.
this is classic podcast material. This is Doug's ordering himself a takeaway.
No, I'm not. I'm re-waterproofing my Gore-Tex, and it's the cycle's just finished. And
I think that's
my better half to put it in the tumble dryer.
There's the podcast title.
Yeah. That's the most Partridge thing you've ever said.
Yes, and one of the most middle class things I've ever done. So, two birds, one stone. Can we get back to taking the piss out of Russ?
Sure.
Of course, yeah.
Well, why is his head upside down?
So we've got a little football thing going, and Russ considered taking part in it, and there's a Facebook Messenger group, and everybody had nicknames. So Ben's nickname's not Tim being his brother. Russ had a nickname, and I can't remember what it was, and he went, oh, how did I get that nickname? And I went, I don't know, I'm gonna change it. And I just called him Fat Dan Cole. So spread the love.
Fat Dan Cole is my favorite thing about Russ, without a doubt. He is a Fat Dan Cole. Are we happy? Are we going to keep it brief tonight? Obviously, because none of us are watching any rugby, we don't want to waste too much of your time. So I think, should we just skip on to AOB?
I've got one more rugby-ish thing to have a quick chat about.
Go on then.
How deep do we think? Right, obviously, the fire sale that's going on at Saracens is a frank admission that they're already over the salary cap for this year. That's a given. How deep do we think the cuts are going to go?
Like, well, to a point where their squad is under the salary cap.
But
so probably thinking, 10 players?
I was going to say, are we thinking 10 high-paid players?
They're looking to
ship Williams as soon as possible, as soon as they can get him out of a contract. Cruz, potentially, there's talk about him going sooner rather than later. Are we talking?
I think the way I sort of see it is you've got Williams was sort of parachuted in, is obviously on a lot of money.
But he wouldn't count against the cap anyway.
He'd be a marquee player.
You would think.
But then if you take him out, somebody in the cap can be a marquee player.
Yeah. If that's how... I mean, Cruz is, you know, getting on a little bit. He's not old by any means, but they've got a lot of second rows coming through. They've got this sort of conveyor belt. Then you've got the likes of Rhodes, Barrett, Goode, who are all looking for a payday, I would imagine. So if Saracens had to, and they said, "Look, thanks very much for all you've done, off you go to Montpellier or Toulon or somewhere like that."
Every other club does.
Yeah. Then, you know, that was probably sort of natural wastage at some stage anyway. So I don't think you're ever going to see them lose the Bunipolas, Farrell. Players like that. I think it will be
the middle ground players.
Well, Doug probably just summed it up like every other club does, you know.
Yeah.
All right, we can't really compete with what X French club is offering. France, then, you know, if you don't want to play for England anymore, that's the hold we have over you. Thanks for your help. Good luck. Off you go. Wigglesworth, another one that will probably be natural wastage in the next year or two anyway.
Or drop your salary by 100k.
Yeah.
The other thing you got to think is that a lot of the players that they're they've been able to integrate. So you Nick Tompkins, Poku, Ezekwe, those kind of players will start moving on because they won't be able to afford their second contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what other clubs do. You know, how many other clubs, how many clubs are made up of players that have come from other teams' academies?
Yeah.
But there aren't that many Saracens players that have, you know,
ended up elsewhere. Yeah. Historically. Yeah.
Mm. Which is in, you know,
it's probably indicative of something. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway.
I'll get my bra out. I have to talk about them for too long. Yeah. Let's do any other business and knock it on the air, because we've chatted shit for 40 minutes. Wow. Can you believe that? Yeah. I want to go and say that I dropped my headphone case. This very case here, I dropped it at Glasgow Airport in between the terminal building and the taxi rank. And I'd lost it for 30 seconds. I went back to find it and it was gone. Phone lost property. It was closed. So I phoned it the following day to be told that they had it, which I was like, oh, brilliant. Someone's been really good and handed it in. My headphones weren't in it. It was just my glasses and a couple of cables that I use for work.
And three or four little plastic bags with some powder in them.
Yeah, they were gone. Yeah. But if you ever lose anything at Glasgow Airport, they charge you £8 repatriation fee to give it back to you.
Even if you're there in person?
Yeah. Yeah. If you lose something and it's handed in at Glasgow Airport, they will charge you £8 to give you your stuff that they acknowledge is yours to
give it
back to you.
Is that legal? Is that legal?
Well, I said to him, look, this is terrible. Like, I can't believe you're doing this. Like, you acknowledge it's mine. You have it. I'm here. Give it to me. No, there's an £8 fee because it's lost on airport property, and airport bylaws state that then if you lose something on their property, it becomes their property. It's the most dreadful thing, the most dreadful piece of profiteering I've ever come across in any walk of life.
Right, that's it. I'm never flying into Glasgow Airport again. Or for a first time.
Yeah. Well, you know, or just don't lose anything at Glasgow Airport because they will charge you to get it back.
Glasgow Airport was where the security guard kicked the attempted terrorist so hard in the balls that he broke his foot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yep.
Yep. Yep. So it swings and roundabouts there, I'd say.
Literally.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
I actually have had a really quiet week. I haven't had anything remarkable. Oh no, actually, I can tell you a funny story. So I was up in London this week, and I had meetings Wednesday and Friday, so I stayed up at sister-in-law, brother-in-law's house, and I figured I could just do some work from there on the Thursday. And I said to them that I'd take their dog out for a walk, but them both working full time, they also have a dog walker come in. So the dog walker came in 10 o'clock whenever I took the dog out for a walk. I thought, that's fine, I'll go and take her for a walk in the afternoon. And thought, I'm getting a bit tubby, I need to do a bit more exercise. I'd taken my running gear up with me, I'll go for a run with the dog. So 3 o'clock, get my clothes on, go out to go for a run with the dog. Monumental monsoon coming down on top of me. So by the time I got to the end of their driveway, which is a car's length, I was probably as wet as if I'd been in a bath. So I thought, sod it, I'm wet, I may as well go anyway. So come on, Betty, on we go, off for a jog. Literally got 20 yards up the road and she went, fuck you, and sat down and refused to move. So I went, fine, I'll pick you up and I'll carry you to the park. She's only a little border terrier. Carried her down to the park, put her down, took the lead off, went, come on then, off for a run. And she turned around and started walking back towards the house.
That's what Russ would do.
Exactly. So I was like, I'm not going to get beaten by a dog. So I put the dog on the lead and I literally dragged it round the park, effectively jogging on the spot, getting laughed at by loads of people under umbrellas and suits. I got back to the house and the dog went, fuck you, I'm going to go and jump on your bed now, soaking wet and covered in mud. So, yeah, never do a good favour for somebody else's dog.
Right. Benjamin, take us home.
Well, if I never, ever hear about the royal family again, I'll be delighted.
Where's that hallelujah button?
Ah, my goodness me. The bloke...
He's lost for words.
I just... Everyone's getting so wound up about it. And it's like, ah, who cares? I mean, Prince Harry's not going to open a fete. Just get one of the others. There's hundreds of them. People are foaming at the mouth. And it's just like...
So I'm a bit of a royalist. I quite like the royal family.
Not Prince Andrew.
Not Prince Andrew, no. No, he is pretty much scum of the earth. But yeah. Other than that, I quite like the royal family. But I literally could not give two shits about this story. It's such a non-story. Somebody who wasn't really doing a job doesn't want to really do the job anymore. Wow.
That is the crux of the story, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. We were at, this is going to sound very countryside, but we were at the Royal Cornwall show, and my sister-in-law, Jamie Lee, were leading a cow, and we were in the main ring, and Prince Edward came over, as he was walking past, and stopped and spoke to Jamie. And she had a nice chat with him for two or three minutes. No, he didn't speak to me. I spoke to the man behind him with the gun. And he walked off, and she turned around and went, "Who was that?" So if it's not the Queen or Prince Charles or Prince William, no one knows who they are anyway. Yeah. So just get some lookalikes in.
Maybe they need a Panini sticker album.
Do you know who they could get in? Rhys Patchell, if he's injured. Just send him off to village fates, county shows, owl sanctuaries, and he can just do the job.
The one thing it has done is it has brought some good meme game out. But
yeah.
Oh, Christ, it's such a non-story, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree. And a good way to wrap it. Why have you sent me a picture of a walrus standing up?
So that's the new England England scrum.
Right, okay.
Have you sent that to us? Oh, here we go. Yeah. He is a big boy.
He is a big boy. We're not going to tweet that, so don't worry about it. Let's wrap it up there. We've done 50 minutes of utter nonsense. And I hope you've enjoyed it. Russ will hopefully be back next week. I hope he hasn't got his minge out about us taking the mickey out of his idea. If you have, Russ, you know.
Did we actually tell the listeners what his idea was?
I don't think we should. Yeah. I think we should leave it out there. I think if you want Russ to do what he said, just drop us a line on Twitter.
And also,
or drop at Russ Milsom a line saying, do the idea.
And also, tweet the podcast. Rampant speculation at what you thought his idea was that was so bad all three of us said no.
Amazing.
And yeah, so just to confirm, what you want to tweet is do the idea to at Fat Dan Cole.
Hashtag we'll Fat Dan Cole fallacy.
We'll be back next week. Cheers, go well.
Folly, that was the word I meant.